From Kenner's Star Wars collection comes a Stormtrooper, the Sand People, and all 20 action figures, including new Hammerhead, Snaggletooth, and more.
For each sold separately.
Hi, and welcome again to the Pod Stallions podcast. I am, as always, Brian, and with me is Jason.
I am still always Jason, whether I like it or not.
That's right. Today we're going to go through the juggernaut that was Star Wars and the impact it had on our young lives. You really can't do anything about the 70s without talking about Star Wars because it really just changed the game.
It changed everything, and what better time to be covering a topic like this than as we're recording this, they sort of had another official press conference sort of announcement thing, where Disney is basically letting everybody know that from 2015 forward till 2020, I think, there is going to be a different Star Wars movie every summer, starting with Episode 7, and then alternating between the official next episodes and standalone adventures. I believe the strongest rumor is a Han Solo adventure, a Boba Fett standalone adventure, and God knows what else.
Well, I think Patton Oswalt's going to write them all.
Yes. I would see that.
I would see that, too.
I would see that in a heartbeat. In fact, I hope Patton gets a part in one of them. Something.
I think that would be terrific.
Give him something. So what better time than now to be talking about this when we're living in a world that...
It's Star Wars all the time, baby.
Star Wars all the time. It's like all this stuff that we never in a million years thought was going to happen is happening.
Star Wars. Nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars.
To when we had the one, what was your first exposure to Star Wars?
Well, I think I can beat you in the timeline because, as we've discussed, you came to it a bit later.
Everybody beats me in the timeline.
Yeah, my recollection is 6 years old, so it's May of 77, May or June of 77, and. On my mother's side of the family, my mother is the oldest of nine kids.
Jeez.
Irish Catholic, of course. Mm-hmm. And the youngest of her siblings was my aunt, Lynn. She was married to a guy named Randy. And they had three kids together. So they divorced not long after the third child was born. But... I have these sort of vague memories of Randy. Looking back now, not understanding at the time, but looking back now, he was probably a bit of a 70s FM rock and roll radio kind of guy, shall we say. Mm-hmm. He probably partook in some herbal jazz cigarettes now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And he was into sci-fi. He turned my older brother, Jack. I have two older brothers, Jack and Gino. He turned my older brother Jack on to Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Oh, neat.
So my brother became sort of hooked on Tarzan and especially John Carter of Mars.
That had no effect on you, eh?
Not at all.
Mm-mm.
He then turned me on to those characters. But so Randy was kind of the guy that opened my brother's eyes up to a lot of sci-fi. And I get the impression that he was probably, like a Starlog guy. He probably followed some of this stuff because he seemed to know about Star Wars. And I remember him sort of talking about it at one point. I mean, again, I'm 6 years old, so these are very, very old memories. And somehow or other, he took me to see Star Wars for the first time. So he took me, it was just the two of us, and it, of course, blew my mind,
uh-huh.
as it did everyone else. My quick little interesting recollection about that experience is the next time I went to see it was with my brother Jack. I mean, of course, I just can imagine that I was this kid that just never shut up about it, and until my brother Jack took me to see it again, and it was the first time that he'd seen it. And I remember distinctly, I've talked about this before, being in the car afterwards, you know, running through the film and the bits that I like. And from the very first viewing, I was a Han Solo guy. Like, there was never, I knew, you know, some kids debated who was cooler, Luke or Han, and my cousin David was into Luke. And I mean, from the get-go, there was never any question that Han Solo was the guy.
I ping-ponged between the two of them, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, no, Han was it. And I remember being in the car, 6 years old, my brother afterwards, and he said, well, what did you think this time? You've seen it twice now. You know, what did you think? And I said, oh, it was great. I love it, you know, and I was going on about it. And then I said, but I got to tell you, that scene in the bar with all those creatures and monsters and stuff, because it was jarring. I remember sitting in the theater seeing that scene, and it kind of scared me. It was kind of loud and weird, and they were monsters, and it was a dark theater. So it was probably the first time I'd been to a movie, not on television at home where you're kind of safe, but to be in a dark theater where there were monsters. I mean, that, I think that's the first memory. I'm in the car afterwards, and I said, I got to tell you, that scene with the monsters in that restaurant bar thing, yeah, that was not in the film the first time I saw it with Uncle Randy. And my brother said, are you really? That's really strange, Jason. Are you sure? I said, yeah, no, I know. I remember. I would remember if that scene was in the movie. That was not in the movie the first time I saw it. And my brother Jack said, well, that's really interesting. Did you leave the theater at any time while you were watching the movie? And it was just like a light went off and I went, oh, yeah. Well, I did go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
At one point. And he's like, yeah, that was it, Jace. You left the theater. But so that was the second time I saw it. And then it became it was it. I mean, it became the thing to do. If you're going to go out on a Saturday night, family was going to go out to a restaurant for dinner. Hey, Star Wars is playing up the street. Might as well go see it. I mean, it truly became the thing to, as if it was a VHS or a DVD that you'd pop in every week. I must have seen it because I saved all my ticket stubs. I must have seen it in the theater, you know, 12, 13, 14 times. And I remember the newspaper ads. I used to cut out the newspaper ads. I still have some of them. I would cut some of them out and save them. And I remember the newspaper ad when it hit a year, when it had been in the theater for a year. Which was kind of unheard of at the time, even, that a movie would be in the theater for that long. But that was my first experience. And then I'll go on about how it changed my life in a minute. But what about you? When did you – because you have an interesting
– Well, yeah. Do you remember that episode of The Simpsons where Bart isn't allowed to go see the Itchy and Scratchy movie?
Yes.
That's me in Star Wars. To give you a little bit of background, you know, coming home from, you know, from school, June 1977, my parents, I would be greeted with the sight of my parents unplugging the TV and putting it in a closet.
Oh.
And they'd be like, TV free summer! And they'd like say it like, you know, they were selling it to me, like this is a great idea. And, you know, that backfired on me because, you know, I spent the first year of college, like, never leave the apartment, you know, Mod Squad and Highway to Heaven, you know. But the so I was oblivious of Star Wars. I was in a vacuum. First of all, you know, we didn't go to the movies a lot as kids.
Okay.
And I had no, you know, idea of how you found out what was playing. Movies were the thing that your grandmother called you one day in the summer and said, I'm taking you to see Lady and the Tramp, you know, and you know, that was it. I didn't live within, I lived within walking distance of one theater, but I was never allowed to go down there. I was six.
Okay.
So completely summer of 77, no idea Star Wars existed.
Okay.
And I probably, I don't remember coming into contact with, with Star Wars until December of 77.
Okay.
My sister went to the hospital for some reason. I can't remember. And I was sitting in the waiting room with my dad, and I picked up a People magazine and was going through the stills of Star Wars.
Was it the one with 3PO on the cover?
I think it was. And
I got it. I still got it.
It was like, when the hell did this happen? You know, kind of, you know, angst.
Right.
So I still didn't see the film because my, you know, my parents said, well, that's out of the theaters. And I forgot about it until March of 78. And we were at the mall, and every March break, my parents would, my mom would take me to the mall. Mm-hmm. And in exchange for trying on clothes at Marks and Spencer all day, I would get a action figure, a toy, whatever. And I went to Eaton's, and the whole wall of them were out there, the first 12.
Yeah.
And I picked C-3PO. I had no idea who any of them were, by the way.
Wow.
And I remember...
This is so strange.
It is very weird. And I remember my sister and I specifically looking at him, and my sister goes, that's the one that speaks in all the whistles and clicks. And I was like, okay. He kind of looked like a Micronaut to me. I think that's why I grabbed him.
Oh, sure.
Still have him. And I started getting into the Marvel comics, which mm-hmm. had nothing to do with the story. And I'm just going to touch on this. I saw the holiday special before I saw Star Wars.
Oh my gosh!
And I was relying on the information of a kid I was friends with for a few grades mm-hmm. named Jerry. And Jerry, if you're listening, you're an ass. and he claimed to have seen Star Wars, and he would feed me the biggest load of crap about the film. Like he, you know, oh no, you see Luke picks up the lightsaber and kills Darth Vader. Then he throws the lightsaber into R2-D2 and he blows up. And then the screen goes blank with the Star Wars theme. And that made sense to me.
Jerry, you jerk!
Yeah, you know, and to be perfectly honest with you, it wasn't until... I think I stopped hanging around with Jerry around 1979 because I finally saw the film in 79.
Right.
And I realized he had been lying to me for years.
Bastard.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I could go on. I could do a whole hour of the crap he told me.
Let me go back 2 seconds because you just triggered something. This is really freaking interesting. And we'll get right back to the toys.
Oh, sure.
Do you remember Bill Murray doing Nick the Lounge Singer on Saturday Night Live?
Not first run, no. Like, but I do remember.
But you remember him.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And, of course, he would riff on Star Wars and different things, and he was friggin' hilarious. Well, as far as I recall, that character was co-created by Bill Murray and Franken and Davis. Mm-hmm. Franken and Davis were from Minnesota.
Oh, funny.
So this is a really bizarre the small world synchronicity thing. It's going to blow your mind a little bit. So one of the sketches, and we all remember this in Minnesota because we freaked. There's a when Murray does the intro, he says, "Thanks, everybody. It's great to be back here in Breezy Point, or at the Breezy Point Resort or something." Mm-hmm. And Breezy Point was a resort in Minnesota that we would go to every summer. And all it was like, you know, like a hotel with like a golf course and swimming pools. And I don't even know exactly what the hell this thing was. But A, it was my introduction to Micronauts because there was another family a couple doors down where the kid brought Micronauts one summer. Like, we probably spent like 4 or 5 days there in the summer. And this kid brought Micronauts, and wasn't there a couple of them that you could put in the water?
Yes.
And that was my first intro to Micronauts. Okay, so it's summer of 77. I've already seen Star Wars, and there's one sort of gift shop, bookstore kind of thing at Breezy Point, and a market as well. Two things happened. One time when my brother Jack went to the market to, you know, stock up on sodas and chips and things like that, he came back with issue number 2 of the Marvel comic, which I remember to this day, the cover is Luke and Ben in the cantina.
Oh, yeah. It's just the most awesome scene ever.
And Luke says something like, keep swinging that lightsaber, Ben, or we're dead or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he brings the comic book, and I wet my pants because it's Star Wars. It's officially the first thing, I believe, that I ever got from Star Wars was this comic book. And, of course, even at 6 or 7 years old, I was like, where are the other issues? I've got to have the other issues. This is issue number two. Where are the others? The second thing was, in that gift shop, do you remember, this is very, has since become very famous and legendary. No one had the license. I mean, there were, Kenner did some puzzles and had a few things here and there, but there was a company that made little pewter figurines. Do you know about this?
They got their ass sued.
And they got busted.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I know all about that.
Those figurines and the little Bantha were in this gift shop. They were on the shelf in this gift shop, and I wanted them, and we couldn't buy them. I don't know if they were expensive or what, but the thing I did pick up in that gift shop was the People magazine with C-3PO on the cover. And I still have it, and I read the article cover to cover, and I'll never forget the bit on Harrison Ford, because he was my guy, Han Solo, and it said he was 33 or 35. And I just remember at the time thinking, oh my gosh, he's that old? Like, he's the oldest guy in this movie. Like, that's really old. I still have that issue of People magazine with 3PO on the cover. But I remember the cover blurb is something along the lines of, you know, meet the wizards behind Star Wars, the biggest movie of the summer. And then in parentheses, it was like all under 30 or most under 30 or something. And how it was this young revolution that was coming with this movie. So sorry to sidetrack, but I had to mention.
Oh, that's not a sidetrack at all. No, that's.
So let's get back now to your experience with the toys, and then I'll give you mine. So at this point, you're still a little behind. You've got 3PO, and you still haven't seen the film. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I didn't see the film until 79 when they came out with that repro, you know, that little booklet they gave you for Kenner toys.
So yes.
I remember I begged my dad, and he made a sales call and before going to see Star Wars. And I was beside myself, you know, like, hurry up, you know. I'll never forget that, you know, crawling around his car watching him make this sales call. And we went to the Odeon Theater, and it blew my mind. I took, like, a stack of those booklets, and I kind of knew what to expect with the film.
Okay. And by the way, let me jump in.
Yeah.
None of the kids in the neighborhood are going, dude, how come you haven't seen Star Wars? And they're not gabbing about it?
Well, I grew up on a kind of a cul-de-sac, and the only other kid that was my age was my buddy Neil.
Okay.
And he was more into, like, hockey and that kind of stuff. So he really wasn't a peer. Like, if you know, I think he got some Mego superheroes on his 7th or 8th birthday, pretty much because I had them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He got them too, but it
right.
was, you know, he would have just been happy with, you know, a Mike Palmateer jersey or something. You know, like he knew all the, he was more into hockey and real things, I guess.
Gotcha.
So, no, I didn't have a big peer group growing up.
That's interesting.
You know, at school maybe a little bit. I don't remember it, though. I don't remember. You know, as soon as I brought, like, C-3PO to school, there were other kids with Star Wars figures. I remember that.
Okay.
But I never really got challenged. And I was reading the Marvel comic, which, you know, of course, had a big green bunny in it. And I was getting them through those Whitman 3-packs.
Wait a minute. So you were reading the extended stories in the comic before you'd even seen the film?
Yeah, and I had the book and record and the storybook.
Oh, my God.
So, I kind of had, and I had all the trading cards and things like that. So, yeah, but I hadn't seen the actual film.
Oh, my gosh. That's kind of fascinating. Like, I've never, ever, ever heard that before.
And once my dad took me to Star Wars, I remember then I kind of figured, I clued in to how to figure out where movies are playing. and kind of, you know, I pressured him, and he would take me to see all the sci-fis.
Okay.
But like we just didn't go to the movies a lot. They just
my folks weren't
big moviegoers.
Interesting.
And my mother has no love for sci-fi, so.
Well, now I'll jump in here with a couple, because of course, as you do, as we were kids, you know, we saw this thing. You still haven't seen it at this point, but I have, and it's changed my life, and I want as much stuff as I possibly can get. And of course, we're all going to the toy store and not finding anything. The People magazine must have been the first thing I got. The next thing I remember was the I forget the company, but there were a series of really cool, now when you look back, marker, you know, poster and marker sets.
I had that set. You mean like the black velvet kind of looking
thing? I don't know if it was black velvet, but it was definitely a black background. And it was a doctor visit. And I hated going to the doctor. Hated it. But it was a doctor visit. And my grandmother and my mother, I think, took me. And I was so miserable that my mother was like, look, we'll go to the drugstore around the corner and you can get something. But you've got to go. You've got to go to this appointment. And we got the poster set before I went into the doctor. So that was one of my other first pieces of merchandise. The other thing I remember distinctly is my cousin David. Again, there were two kids in my life. One was Mark Bukulski, who lived down the street, about six houses down the street. The other was my cousin David. They were both a couple years older than me, and they both got everything before I did. So my cousin David especially, if it was out there, he got it. I would eventually get it, and then he would get the next thing, and half the time I never got the next thing, but I was able to compete here and there. And he got most of the stuff before me. So I've got the poster set, and the next thing he gets is The Story of Star Wars, which is the book and record set. And I remember him getting it, and me just sort of being incredulous, like, I can't believe, how do you have the movie on record? Mm-hmm. You know, like at that point, I had one from The Hobbit, the Rankin Bass thing, which was a tiny little record. You turn the page and it goes ding and all that stuff. I just couldn't get my head around the fact this was the actual dialogue and music. And so when I got some bread, I don't know if it was my birthday money or what it was, I ran to the record shop, my brother Jack. It's incredible how vivid these memories are, how clear this stuff is to me. My brother Jack took me downtown St. Paul to a Music Land or Great American Music or whatever was out there. And I took my birthday money and I got two things, if I recall. I got the Cars first album. So this has got to be 78 now. I mean, maybe I'm getting my timelines wrong. I don't know. But I went to get The Story of Star Wars. And I took it home and ripped the plastic off that thing and stuck it on the turntable, put the needle down, boom, the fanfare, the music. I'm playing it for a little bit. No dialogue. What's going on? I pick up the needle. I put it to the next track.
No, you bought the soundtrack.
No dialogue. And I'm like, this is a ripoff. You know, where's the damn thing? And then when my brother came in the room, he said, Jace, I think you made a mistake. And it, sure enough, it was the soundtrack. Which was a double album, by the way. And so I went through I don't know how many tracks before I realized there's no dialogue. And but it came with that amazing poster. Did you ever see that? Do you remember that?
Yeah, barely. But
it came with this really messed up painting of the final battle, the Death Star, you know, the Death Star fight scene, and it just was this almost Jackson Pollock kind of mess of a painting of all these ships and explosions and stuff. And I think my brother was cool enough to take me back to the record store the next day to take it back to, or exchange it for the right, the correct album. But I kept the poster.
Oh, cool.
Which,
I'm just looking at it online because I never owned it, but it's nice.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we'll fast forward a bit to Christmas of 77. And for those of you that don't know, this is a very, very famous story and legend now about Kenner. Two things happened. One, just like every studio that turned it down, what's remarkable about Star Wars, and I don't think this is said enough or stressed enough just how, I mean, everybody knows how big it was and the phenomenon that followed and all the sci-fi stuff that followed and all that jazz. What I don't think is stressed enough was every single studio turned this thing down. Nobody wanted anything to do with it. The only sci-fi picture that had really turned over a profit, a significant profit and merchandise as well, was Planet of the Apes and the series of Planet of the Apes films.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But even that was sort of peanuts compared to what was to come. So no, everybody turns it down. Fox says yes. Alan Ladd Jr. is the champion of this thing. He says yes. And in many ways, not only did it save the studio, because Fox was sort of in trouble at the time, it really helped rejuvenate the industry a bit. I mean, the 70s were good. You know, things like Jaws was massive for Universal, and The Godfather, and all these 70s pictures with the all the movie school brats like Scorsese and De Palma and Spielberg and Lucas and all these guys that came out of the, you know, film schools. It was good, but Star Wars really turned the industry around, and it helped save Fox. And by the same token, it not that Kenner was hurting or really in trouble, but it really turned Kenner around. Kenner was like a, you know, did well with $6 Million Man, but it's not like it was the biggest toy company out there. And
no,
and
not at all.
Star Wars, you know, put it on the friggin' map. So they don't have anything in time for Christmas. They've got nothing. They got some puzzles and some paint by numbers and whatever the hell else they managed to get out, but they got no toys. And legend has it, I forget the specific names of the two Kenner guys, they're sitting around talking about toys for Star Wars, and they're saying, well, you know, what are we going to do? The standard out there is basically 12-inch figures, a la Steve Austin. That's fine and dandy, but if we want to make an X-Wing fighter or the Millennium Falcon, it's going to be, you know, as big as a house if we want to get these 12-inch figures to sit in it. So what are we going to do? The other guy says, how about this? And he holds his index finger and
thumb. Yeah, that's Bernie Loomis.
Bernie Loomis.
Yeah.
The other guy comes over with a ruler, measures it. It's 3 3/4 inches, and that becomes the standard for the next 15, 20 years in action figures. And
I will cry a little BS on that. I've always thought
it's got to be right. It's too precise to be true.
It's too precise because Fisher-Price already had a 3 3/4 inch line of action figures and vehicles,
right?
Adventure people, and Mego had already copied that and had the Micronauts out there. They say that, but I really think that they were influenced by other people in the market.
Yeah, it's too precise. But the genius thing they did do was, because there was nothing available for Christmas, and we all know how important Christmas is, number one. Number two, biggest movie of all time for merchandise, and they sold the Early Bird kit. And for those of you that don't know, the Early Bird kit was a rectangle cardboard envelope with artwork, not even pictures of the figures, because they hadn't been made at this point.
It was those great drawings.
It was beautiful drawings, which I'll tell you, I screwed up. First of all, the Early Bird kit was under the tree in my house, Christmas of 77. And when you opened it up, there was a card for the Star Wars Space Club that you filled your name in on. There was a little set of stickers of 3PO, R2, May the Force Be With You, the logo, whatever. And then there was this cardboard background that eventually, when you collected all the figures, whenever they were going to come out, you would stand the figures up on this cardboard background, which was that same beautiful art of the first 12 figures. What did I do as a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, because I was so hungry for toys and for action figures? I cut them out of the cardboard, and they became my little action figures until the damn toys showed up.
I would have done the same.
Was also a certificate, which, now that you've paid for the Early Bird kit, $10 or whatever it was, you mail the certificate in, and within the first, you know, 3 or 4 months of 78, I don't know, March, April, whatever it was, you were going to be the first kid on your block to get the Early Bird set of action figures in a white mailer box, which correct me if I'm wrong, you probably, same experience, would end up being the very first thing that we ever mailed away for.
I would say most kids, it would whet your appetite for mailing away for things.
Exactly. So the early bird figures were Luke, Leia, Chewbacca, and R2-D2. The thing that makes them unique from future releases of the same figures, Chewbacca had a green plastic crossbow rather than black when the next Chewie came out. And then Luke, of course, had what they call the telescoping lightsaber.
Right.
The lightsaber that pulled out from his arm instead of just being one level. You know, it looks like a little hypodermic needle, like a little skinny needle, and then the thicker part of the lightsaber. You know, the little skinny part's the tip. The early bird Luke, you could actually pull that tip out as well, so it made it extra long, but it was still yellow, like all of the Luke, Star Wars Lukes. And that was it. And the first kid, and he's probably listening right now, because he tracked me down about 4 or 5 years ago on Facebook, David Salkow, was my good buddy, my best friend, first, second, third grade. And he was the first kid that got it. And he brought the early bird kit in for show and tell. He got it before I did. And here all these years later, he's probably listening to the podcast right now. So did you have the early bird kit?
I don't think it came to Canada. Really? There's a great book called Kenner Canada, The Irwin Toys Connection. And I was just breezing through that, and I cannot find any sighting of the early bird kit in it. Now, having said that, there's a couple of neat things in here. One was, I guess Irwin, which was Kenner Canada, they put all 12 figures into a big box of the first 12, and it was like a gift set.
Cool.
And I tell you, I'm not a big Star Wars collector.
Right.
That thing just makes me weak in the knees to see
it. Oh, I'll bet.
And the
Canada also got something that no one else got, which were pulled supposedly right away.
I was just about to touch on that.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
The utility belts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were Kenner.
They're Irwin Toys. Irwin was also the distributor in Canada for Remco, AHI. Okay. And these things, if they weren't made by AHI, I don't know what they are. Leia's utility belt even has that Batman communicator kind of thing. So
it was a utility belt with the Star Wars. It was very much, anybody listening has reference, very much like the Remco utility belts that were made. So it was the belt itself, instead of being like a, you know, Batman sort of thing with the Batman logo, the belt buckle is a Star Wars logo.
As they wore in the movie.
As they wore in the movie. There's a little lightsaber. There's a pistol. I mean, I think there's a Darth Vader one, a Luke Skywalker one, and a Princess Leia one.
Princess Leia has the Batman communicator with, I think it's just like a, I can't tell what's drawn on it, but it's that same, that same AHI Remco Batman communicator, and I think there's a wristwatch too. There's a great story behind these in that, you know, Irwin was selling these pretty good,
mm-hmm.
and Kenner USA approached Lucas and said, we'd like to bring these into the country.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently Lucas, and I'm paraphrasing because I'm reading the book right now, mm-hmm. And by this book, it's called Irwin Toys, The Canadian Star Wars Connection.
Oh, my God. I've got to get I've never heard of this.
It's by Apogee Books. I actually know the publisher. They showed it to Lucas, and Lucas had approved utility belts as a toy concept, but had not approved these ones.
Okay.
And apparently, allegedly, he looked at them, said, these are crappy, and not only are you not allowed to bring them into the States, I want the Canadian guys to stop making them.
Oh.
So they're really rare. Like, they're worth $3,000 to get them.
Well, I was going to say, now, I have a real soft spot for utility belts / attaché cases, any of this stuff, kid stuff, anything that's kind of related. I've got a real soft spot for that. I mean, I don't know if I ever told you about, I've got a Joan 90 attaché case. that came out in the mid 90s that is just brilliant.
I think I knew about that.
And one of it's very similar to one that came out in the 60s when the show came on. But the fact that there were utility belts made for Star Wars at some point just thrills me. And but then now you're saying they're like one of the most impossible things. In all your years of collecting and being in Canada, have you ever come across any of them in any shape or form?
I kind of, you know, I tend to, especially in my toy dealing days and stuff, I used to kind of hang around with Star Wars guys because Star Wars guys were kind of those non-competers.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't into the same stuff. So,
right.
And they were kind of always, you know, decent guys to talk to. So I mm-hmm. knew when they would surface, they'd go for thousands. You'd see the odd pistol and belt buckle somewhere.
Right.
But I've never been in like a, you know, a situation where I got one cheap. No.
Didn't I send you a link like a year ago to one that was, it was just bits of it. It was missing. I think it was the box and like one piece or the belt or something. Remember I sent you a link and you were like, oh my God, you've never come across the box.
Yeah. I've never seen a boxed one. I remember seeing them in catalogs as a kid, but they just, even as a kid, I was like, that's crap.
You know, yeah, but it's just the kind of thing that somebody would have done as a utility belt. It's kind of
oh,
like
yeah. I had several crappy utility belts as a kid.
I mean, wasn't there a let's go through just as a sidetrack. Let's go through some of the Remco utility belts. You had the Star Trek one, which is really the granddaddy. The Star
Trek, beautiful. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
I think the Star Trek and the Batman are the two most logical.
Yes.
Of them, and then you get Space 1999. I think they had a couple iterations of Spider-Man and
yep.
Captain America's. Then you're yep. starting to get really kind of stupid.
Then you get into the Hulk.
The Hulk, which has got that voice modulator.
Oh, I mean, it's brilliant. Like Captain America, like Spidey could probably use a utility belt.
Well, he has one technically under his costume.
Yeah, he could use a cell phone and some other odds and ends. The Hulk, other than keeping his pants on.
Yeah, it should be a cord.
I can't imagine why he'd try to keep track of a utility belt. But I love the more creative it got with things like the Hulk voice changer. There's a Buck Rogers one. Well, I love the Star Trek one because what I love is taking it out of the box, laying out the communicator, the tricorder, and the phaser, and then right next to it laying out the ones that Diamond just did, you know, like the TV accurate tricorder and yeah. communicator, and lay those out and just see the difference. And they shot discs, very cool, little round discs. So the Buck Rogers one, for example, is, again, a belt. And it comes with the Star Trek phaser. They just slapped a Buck Rogers sticker over the Star Trek words.
Yeah.
And added a little bit to the end of it. It doesn't shoot anything. It just clicks. You know, it's a few years later, whatever. So the fact that these Star Wars ones were done, I think is kind of brilliant. Which is interesting because I don't know if you're aware of this, but I forget which one of the Star Wars books, one of those like Sand Suite kind of things, that's come out. I want to say for Return of the Jedi, he's got a couple of sections in one of these books that's conceptual stuff that never made it past the drawing board, so to speak.
I've seen some of that stuff before.
Right, and I think for Jedi, they had conceptualized a Boba Fett utility belt. And it would have been a belt with a wrist gauntlet that, you know, shot rope or something.
Neat.
And I think a gun and a few other things, but it was going to be, you know, it was interesting because you'd go, oh man, if that had worked, if that had come out, maybe we would have gotten some utility belts because they eventually made one for Luke. They made a Luke sort of, they didn't call it, I don't think they called it a utility belt. But
oh, I remember like 97, they made like a, or was it 97? They made kind of like a Luke kit or something.
It came with the binoculars and a crappy little gun and something else, and then the belt itself that everything was supposed to sort of, you know, hook onto. But imagine a Han Solo, you know, utility belt with a pistol. Okay, so I get the early bird kit, and not long after David Salkow brings his in to show and tell, Mine shows up. So now I've got four figures. And I don't know the timeline backwards and forwards here, but I don't think it was too long. Like Kenner, once Kenner saw how big this movie was, they really didn't piss around. I mean, they really moved. They didn't waste any time in trying to get stuff to the market. So they really hustled to get this stuff made. And I think that that initial 12 characters, well, let's say 8 characters, because the 4 had come out in the Early Bird Kit. And by the way, the Early Bird Kit, for the listeners again, was not a disaster by any means.
It was a hit.
It didn't set the world on fire. They ended up with a lot of discounted envelopes after Christmas. But it did the trick. It got people talking. It got people hungry for this stuff. Kids were aware of it, and they did it. They sold an empty envelope, a cardboard envelope for Christmas, got people to buy it, and it was a kind of a genius thing. So not long after that Early Bird Kit started to hit people's houses, I believe that first batch of Star Wars figures made it to market. And these are the ones that everybody famously calls the 12 backs, because on the back of the card is that same artwork. It's not even pictures of the action figures. It's artwork of the characters, and each one has a little bio.
Those are the ones I collect, actually. I think you were with me when I picked up a Stormtrooper.
Yes, I was. Yeah. And back when I collected and I had loads of stuff, when I collected Indiana Jones, I had a massive Indiana Jones collection. But because I loved Han Solo so much, I would dabble in getting some Han Solo stuff. So I had the boxed 12-inch Kenner Han Solo figure. I had one version of each of the Han Solo action figures that came out.
Hmm.
So I had the 12-back Palitoy Han. I had a large head tri-logo, I think, Han. And then the Power of the Force, Carbonite Han, the Hoth Han, all those. I had each one carded. So I go to the shopping mall with my dad and my cousin David one day on a Saturday. And my dad gives each of us 5, 6, 7 bucks, whatever it is. Go to the toy store. I'm going to go over here and do whatever. I'll meet you back here in a half hour. We go to the toy store in the Maplewood Mall, which is called Kids. And there on the countertop, when you walk in the store, as if it were yesterday, I swear, was the counter display for the 12-back figures. I mean, imagine walking into that store today with an entire set of Star Wars figures up on the counter.
Yeah.
That's like Fantasy Island right there.
I got to tell you something. Just getting off topic of that, it's a true story. My dad was in the toy industry a little bit, and he had a close buddy he used to go to New York Toy Fair with, who owned a chain of stores called Pinocchio's Toys. And we used to come visit him. I don't know if my dad had business with him or just going to say hi, but of course I was always game to go see him.
Sure.
And I remember once we came in through the back of his store, and in the alley, like the little, laneway to the, there was a original, probably the 21 figures cardboard standee.
Mm.
And his store was too small to do that. He would just peg all the figures. And right. I was like, wow, as he let us out. And he went, do you want it, Brian? You can have it. Just take it. Mm-hmm. And my dad went, no, you're not taking that garbage home. That's garbage. And I just, I think about that now, and it's like,
when I got older, early 20s, I think I had a cardboard header.
Oh, yeah.
Which had photos of the characters. You remember that? Like little square photos?
Yep. My buddy
and it
had
said,
one
like,
of those.
Collect all 20 or 21 or something?
Yeah.
I had that. Someone had taken a Sharpie.
Uh-huh.
And in one of the letters of Star Wars, somebody took a Sharpie and wrote 199 or something, or 299 or something.
I like that.
Yeah, no, I sold it years later, I got a pretty penny for it. So we're in kids. I'm with my cousin David. I've told this story before, but it's brilliant because it tells you exactly who this kid, my cousin, was. He was 2 years older than me, but dumber than a bag of hammers. And we get a few bucks from my dad. He says, go ahead. We each pick two action figures off the shelf. He picks Vader and a Stormtrooper. And these must have been my next two figures after the early bird kit were Han Solo, small head Han, and C-3PO. And I put them in my, you know, I pay for them, I get them in the bag, and I just can't wait to get home to open these suckers up. My cousin decides to open. I remember distinctly saying to him, I wouldn't do that. I'd wait till you get home to open them. No, I'm going to open them right now. So he opened them, threw the packaging away, and because he was an idiot, he took the figures, and instead of just putting them in his jacket pocket, you know, he had a knit cap on. It's you know, still cold. It's Minnesota. It's the spring. And you know those black knit caps where the bridge, just you just fold the bridge up around this?
Yep.
You know, he tucked them into the fold of the cap, the Stormtrooper and Vader. And I said, you're going to lose that gun. And sure enough, by the time we got to the car, he lost the Stormtrooper's blaster, which just real quick, another sign, because this is all coming back to me. That summer, so summer of 78 was the greatest birthday in the history of birthdays, because I was turning 8 years old. And it was the Star Wars birthday. It was the first birthday that – I mean, I get the feeling – now looking back on this, that it was such a – it loomed so large in my life that my brothers, my parents, all my relatives, everyone knew how important this movie was to me. Just like kids today where, you know, you – like your kids, you aware – you're aware of what they're into. So when it comes time for the holidays or their birthday or whatever, you know it's going to make these kids smile when they rip open the wrapping paper.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So it must have been like that for me. And Star Wars up the yin-yang.
I think you sent me photos of that.
Yes, I did.
I come across them occasionally. I got to put them up for this podcast.
Oh, you should put them up. It's brilliant. Yeah. Because what was so great about that experience, not only just getting all this stuff, I had a younger cousin. Actually – the little cousin in those photos keeps trying to grab my Star Wars figures. That is a cousin called Jacob, who is Randy's oldest kid. So Randy, the guy I told you about that took me to the movie, that's his son, Jacob. So at this birthday, what's brilliant about it was I got duplicates of the Death Squad commander and the Stormtrooper. And I remember my cousin, the same cousin, somehow got a peek under the wrapping paper of some of these. And he came over to me and gave me a heads up and said, listen, you're going to get a couple of duplicates, but don't make your aunts feel bad about it. Instead, just say, well, there's a lot of these guys in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. When I opened the Stormtrooper, I got two of them and I go, oh, well, this is great. There's a whole bunch of them in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, even as a kid, even as a little kid, I was thinking of other people's feelings. That's never changed.
Thoughtful little boy.
Still a thoughtful little boy. So that's my next batch of figures. And then it truly became, if the report card was good or if I did the thing or this, Star Wars became a reward. I mean, another character. And God bless her, my mom never made a mistake. She always knew what I was missing. I mean, one time I got a great report card and she had on her own picked up Obi-Wan and Greedo.
You know, my mom was smart that way too.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I think people forget now too, though. These toys were everywhere.
That's what I wanted to touch upon earlier. Was you know, you said you got them at a toy store. I can specifically remember getting like, you know, my parents would go for milk on Sunday night after leaving my grandmother's house.
Uh-huh.
I got my Han Solo at the milk store around the corner. I got my Darth Vader at the Miracle Mart while my mom was shopping. It was in the cereal aisle hanging.
Yes, they were in supermarkets.
And Cheerios had a mail away offer for figures too. They were everywhere. I was buying them in grungy variety stores that normally just sold rack toys.
Well, there's something to hit on, because we could I mean, we really could talk about the phenomenon Star Wars and any.
One thing I wanted to touch upon was also,
yeah.
Do you remember, like, there was so much knockoff out there? Like, my dad was in the toy business at the time,
and
he was selling these pendants that were like Darth Vader's head. I don't know if they were licensed or not. R2-D2 and the legs would go up and down.
Yes. No, they were licensed.
They were licensed?
I had the 3PO. I had an X-Wing. And what was great, one time – I can't believe I'm telling you this or saying this on a podcast, but I was a bit of a thief at 7, 8 years old. And there was one time I was in a store and there was a display of all the Star Wars jewelry, all the necklaces, the rings, all that stuff. And each – necklace came with a little silver booklet, a little square silver booklet. When you opened it up, it was just one piece of cardboard that was folded in half with the logo on the front. When you opened it up, it gave you a description of the ship or the character that you had just bought a pendant of. And at one time, I yanked all the little booklets off of the necklaces. I didn't steal the necklaces. I just stole the little booklets because I wanted them for research. Because I mean, I'm not joking. I'm not trying to be funny, but like,
yeah, I got you.
The little paragraph on the X-Wing was more detailed than any article I'd ever read in these little booklets. The X-Wing, the TIE Fighter, it even explained what the word TIE stood for in this little booklet. Now, this is getting to something else. One thing I was going to say real quick about, because you mentioned cereal or Cheerios, how this thing permeated every facet from pajamas and the sheets that we slept on to the stuff we ate for breakfast the next morning. And every cereal, General Mills, like every major cereal seemed to have one promotion or another at some time. We had a fast food joint called Burger Chef.
I've heard of it, yeah.
And Burger Chef was the first one. They got the Star Wars license. They made drinking glasses, posters, and they had what, to my knowledge or my experience, were the first kids' meals. I got a kids' meal at Burger Chef before I ever got one at McDonald's. And they had, you know, prizes in the kids' meal. You know, it came with like a burger, fries, beverage, and then it came on this tray that generally you'd flip the tray over and you could punch out things that were on this cardboard tray. They had a punch-out 3PO, a punch-out R2, and this is the part that I love so much about this, and why we could talk about this, I feel, for hours. This whole Star Wars world. We're now, you know, here we are making the people making this announcement that more stuff is coming, and I feel like we're getting back to, or hopefully going to get back to the vibe of those first three movies, and the adventure and the fun and all that stuff. The reason I have such a fondness for a million reasons, my age at the time, you know, what was going on in my life, in that world, whatever. But Star Wars in particular, you mentioned the holiday special.
Yeah.
Holiday special could never get made today. Wouldn't have been made post-Empire. It never would have been made. Something fascinating that I'm sure people know, but in case they don't, just real quick, studio. If we get to make more movies, I'd like to have the merchandise rights.
Yeah.
And they scoffed and laughed and thought, you maniac, that'll never happen. But sure, why not? Take them. Don't worry about it. So everything from 77 to 79 is stamped 20th Century Fox. Everything from 1980 forward is stamped Lucasfilm. And he got the merchandise rights. God bless him. No one had ever done it before or since. It's kind of genius. Maybe Will Eisner retaining the rights of the Spirit or something. But it's so bizarre.
I think Arthur P. Jacobs had something. Appjack Productions is on all the Planet of the Apes stuff.
Oh, okay. Genius.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I find so brilliant about this period that we're talking about is it is still this netherworld where everything is not figured out. You're talking about comic books with a 6-foot green rabbit in them. We're talking about the holiday special, the little booklets that came with the necklaces that explained what a TIE fighter was. This is all, it's all still fresh and being discovered and being made up. Like Lucas didn't even have it all figured out at this point. And I love that. I love the period between 77, you know, the first movie and Empire, where, you know, just the stuff like, how can I describe, like, just the art, just the sci-fi articles that would be written, and the things that, you know, the hypothesis about how Vader, you know, looked the way that he did and how things happen and all this weird stuff that never came true. I just love, because it was all still a mystery. It was all still brand new, and they hadn't sussed it all out. And I love that aspect of Star Wars. It's where, you know, it's why I always bitch about the DVDs and stuff that have come out. They're so lacking in all that amazing stuff, like the Donnie and Marie appearances or the television commercials or whatever, when people were still poking and prodding this thing and not knowing really what the hell it was. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I kind of, that's my sole nostalgia for Star Wars these days, because I'm beaten with it every day, because my son can't go to the bathroom without lightsaber moves, you know. And heaven help us if we go to a store and there's an automatic door. It has to be forced opened.
It's genius. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's I really retain my nostalgia for Star Wars from about 78 to 79. That is like the when it was fresh and it was new and it was so exciting. And, you know, I wanted to share this story because it came to me. My dad had a contact who was big in the vending machine game.
Okay.
I remember this guy. He was like Mr. 1978. He wore like an Oscar Goldman type outfit, and he had the bright idea of making rings and pendants that just said the Force.
Whoa! In
big bold letters.
I've got one.
And he I remember he gave me one.
They're gold. They were black plastic with gold, shiny gold on the.
Yeah.
Of course, I've got one.
And he was like, "It's awesome." He goes, "It's a license to print money. It's their religion or whatever it is." And he gave me a bag of them
when I was a kid. Hold on. I'm sorry. Are you telling me you know the guy that came up with the idea to make?
Well, he was a big wheel. I asked my dad about him a while ago, and he goes, that guy used to have, you know, a boardroom with 12 telephones, you know, around it and stuff. I don't know how my dad knew him, but yeah, he claimed to be the guy who did that.
Oh my God.
And I
got that out of a gumball machine.
Yeah, he was the gumball machine king, this guy. And yeah, I remember that. He gave me a bag of those, and I was like, that bought me so much street cred
school. Well, I've got you mentioned that earlier. Like, did I have any of the knockoff type stuff? Well, the necklaces that you initially thought were knockoff, that was all real stuff and licensed stuff. What I did have, and I still have, were out of the gumball machines. I have the Force ring. I was just going to talk about this when you asked about knockoffs. What a small freaking world that is. I've got the Force ring and a blue X-wing. It's plastic. It's a flat little plastic piece toy, and it only has two wings. It's as if you're looking at it from above, and it's a knockoff, but it's a little blue plastic X-wing, and I still have those suckers. This leads to something else, where once Star Wars came out and was flipping massive, everybody and their mother was trying to make some kind of sci-fi feature or television series or comic book or toy or something. And there is not enough time in the day to talk about just how many knockoffs and ripoffs and all kinds of stuff that they're
great stuff. And I you know what, I think that's even an episode in itself, is just your favorite Star Wars knockoff.
Yeah, that's the idea.
I wanted to touch upon a toy because I want to put it out there to the listenership, if you know where to find this, because I need to re-own it. When I was a kid, and I think they were distributed in Canada by CCM, who normally distributed bike stuff, so I'm not sure who actually made it in the United States. Okay. But there was a glow-in-the-dark sword called Space Sword, and it was just, you know, glow-in-the-dark plastic. It looked like a medieval sword, and it had a a sticker on the handle that said Space Sword, and it ingeniously they had a follow up called Star Shield, which was a glow in the dark shield that had a handle and a picture of space fights on the inside, and the sword slid into the shield.
Cool.
So it was, it had nothing to do with Star Wars, but it was easily rocked the TV-free summers of my youth.
Well, I want one of those. Well, that leads me to, speaking of back to the whole knockoff thing. Occasionally Mom would get it wrong. So for two or three Christmases, birthdays in a row, I wanted the Han Solo laser pistol. I never got it. And it's not her fault. I don't want to sound like that kid. But I got about half a dozen other guns that were completely different. But the first mistake that I got, and I still have, is the three-position laser rifle, the Kenner Star Wars three-position laser rifle, which was never the three-position laser rifle after Star Wars. It only – just that run of the – basically the Stormtrooper rifle.
Yeah, I had that one.
Had the stock that pulled down and became a shoulder stock. And when you pulled the trigger, it made that –
And the you could see the twirly stuff inside.
The twirly stuff inside, which I always thought was fascinated by, because the twirly stuff, the sticker inside there was yellow, I believe.
Yellow with stripes, right?
Yellow with stripes to make a yellow laser beam. The lightsaber that Luke, his little action figure, had was yellow. And then when Kenner finally made their inflatable lightsaber, it was yellow. I never understood that. But I got a lightsaber. I thought it was the real thing, but it turns out it wasn't. It was, again, one of those knockoffs. And I think it was just either said the Force or Force Sword or Star Sword or something. And it was a black handle, and it had a little bit of a, what do you call it, a hilt, the round thing that rests on your palm.
Yeah.
And a long white plastic tube. And when you flick the switch, it lit up red. I mean, obviously not very bright. If you turn the lights off, it was pretty good. It didn't make any noise. But it was, to me, it was closer to a Star Wars lightsaber than the yellow thing that Kenner put out. I never understood why they put out a yellow inflatable lightsaber. And then my cousin David would come over. This is really – this is lame. But in my defense, I was 7. He would come over, we would put the story of Star Wars on, and we would mimic it and act out the entire story, switching off parts. He played Luke, I played Han, somehow I got stuck playing Leia, I think he played Ben. Here's a neat little follow-up. Many years later, I'm living in Los Angeles, I'm living in an area called Toluca Lake. And not far from where I lived, in the building I lived in, there were about, first off, I had a good friend, Daniel Soyseth, who I'm still friends with, lives out here, Minnesota guy. He lived in the building. That's how I sort of got into the building. And then there were two or three other guys, all from Minnesota. We all lived in the same. We all kind of would go to Target on Sundays and, had that, tried to keep our Midwestern values and stuff. Well, there was this bar up the street. It's still there on Riverside, called Timmy Nolan's. And one of the regulars at Timmy Nolan's, without fail, always sat at the bar, the corner stool, was Roscoe Lee Brown.
Box.
Exactly. But more importantly, he was the narrator of the Story of Star Wars album.
Oh, I see.
And I'll never forget meeting him the first time. And Roscoe loved martinis and was also, shall we say, rather fond of young men.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I had no conceived notion of him, so okay.
No, hello, darling. How are you? Hello. He was kind of that, and I'll never forget the first time I told him. It sort of jostled his memory.
Yeah.
Star Wars, the guy's done so much. He had done so much. And at that time, he was best known. I mean, the thing that was getting him back into the consciousness was Babe, because he narrated Babe, and everybody was talking about Babe. But the first time I got enough gumption, I'd had a few martinis myself, went up to him at the bar and told him the story of Star Wars and how I played that album every day for several years. It was a thrill. It was one of those moments that it really was. I mean, I know it's not, you know, creating penicillin or something, but it's really for this kid from the Midwest that came out to L.A. to meet Roscoe and think about that little kid in his bedroom playing that album, hearing his voice. You know, the world got very, very small.
Yeah, that's actually very neat.
I think so too. It doesn't happen that often, but it's pretty cool.
He did a million. Oh no, I'm thinking of someone else. Never mind. I was thinking of movie trailers, but that's Percy Rodriguez I'm thinking of. They both have have that great voice.
Yes, Roscoe's hello. He sort of talked like this all the time, and he did everything. He also, you'll appreciate this, I think he replaced Benson. When
yes.
Benson left Soap to go do Benson, he was the new Benson. Isn't that right?
He wasn't Benson. He was the new butler. He was Saunders.
Saunders, okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
Saunders was a bit of a badass, as I recall. I remember liking that character.
And what was the John Wayne, what was the Western he was in? Was it the Cowboys?
Oh, gosh.
He's a real badass in that one, too.
Yeah. No, I don't know that one.
But he was, Logan's Run. Even as a kid with Logan's Run, I thought, why are they naked? Why? It's freezing. Why are they only wearing furs? I'm not complaining that Jenny Agutter, you know, takes her clothes off again, but it doesn't really make any sense that they're both kind of naked right now.
Why do Logan and Jessica have British accents in a sealed city where no one else has British accents? Sorry, that bugged me as a kid. You know,
they were
from the English district.
Yeah, they went to RADA.
Uh-huh.
They kept RADA going.
If you and I grew up in the same town, and I'm like, hey, Jason, you want to go out? And you're like, yes, that would be wonderful. Where did you come from?
Yeah, I'd imagine in the future when everyone's kind of dim that it probably would have scared a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, it probably would have scared some of the natives, like, why are they talking that way?
I'm not crapping on Logan's Run. I'm actually staring at an autographed picture of Michael York.
Logan's Run was kind of disturbing because I think it was one of those things that I saw. I saw it after Star Wars.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, because it can't, you know.
Yeah, I must have too, because I like the show, but the word Sandman confused me because I was like, what's this got to do with Tusken Raiders? You know, I'm a little kid.
Yeah, the Sand People.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, my niece who lives in Scarsdale, my brother and his wife, and my niece Sophia has now lately, the past year or so, just become hooked on Star Wars. Tried to watch a few minutes of the prequels, didn't really care for it.
Yeah.
So she's really into the originals, mainly Star Wars and Empire. And that first time that she was really on this kick, you know, just watching it all the time. Every time we get on the phone, she'd just have loads of questions. Why did this happen? And how come so-and-so is angry about this? And why did Luke? And I had answers for just about everything. And it was one of those moments of like, oh, man, I've been waiting my whole life for somebody to ask me these questions. It's great. There's finally a child I can educate. One of the things she asked was, so I don't understand. Luke tells 3PO that the Sand People only come out at night. And then the next morning when they're looking for R2, he gets attacked by Sand People. Why is that? And I just went, you know, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then you see them in the day in all the prequels.
Yeah. I said it never occurred to me in all these years, but you're right. What the hell are they doing out in the daytime? I said, maybe Luke just got his information wrong, clearly, because he got beat up by the people. So, okay, so we got Star Wars, we got the holiday special, we got merchandise coming out like crazy. And then, as we've talked about several times before, every magazine, even the mainstream magazines, everybody's talking about Star Wars. But for our purposes, you know, the Starlogs, the Fangorias, the Famous Monsters, they're all reporting on Star Wars. And, man, if there was a way to sell a magazine, they would just put Star Wars on the cover or mention something, or especially as the years wore on, promises on the cover of some tidbit of information about the sequel.
Oh yeah, I've got one that just is like, it reads like that Patton Oswalt rant, like Boba Fett is the real clone of Anakin, or is the real Anakin, and both Luke and Vader are clones of Anakin from the Clone Wars, and it's just, you know, you read it and you go, you know, and Chewbacca's in on this conspiracy because, you know, and it's just none of it's true. But actually, when you read it, you're like, that's actually more interesting than some of the prequels, you know.
Yeah, I've actually got a copy of Starlog with Black Hole on the cover. Yeah. Same thing is happening. All these little either letters are being written in or articles are being written saying this is going to happen. And
yeah.
Luke is going to have to fight Han to the death because Han starts to go toward the dark side. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you ever got duped like this, but I'd walk to the newsstand and there'd be like this complete toilet paper thing called like Laser Blast or something.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And you'd pick it up because it had like Han Solo on the cover, and you'd open it up and there'd be like, you know, three black and white pages about Star Wars with a BS article, and the rest would be like pictures of Buster Krabs, Flash Gordon, and, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I did that all the time because anything remotely related to it, you know, we had to pick up. But this leads me to the next thing, which ties into the sequel and, of course, merchandise. So now it's 79. We're getting closer and closer to The Empire Strikes Back. And suddenly, we notice this sticker on the front of the action figures, whenever we're at the store looking for action figures, which talks about this character called Boba Fett, which was the first time we ever heard of this guy. I don't think he was in any of the literature or comics or anything until he was on the cover or the front of those action figures with that sticker.
Well, does that predate the holiday special? I can't remember.
I think it was right around
the same time
because yeah. I swear they mention the holiday special on the card. I'm almost positive.
I was all in at that point. I remember that was a big deal. And I also remember, do you remember that on the back, the description of Boba Fett, there was a black sticker over something?
Yes, and I swear to you, this isn't just, you know, looking back on a legendary thing and making this shit up. I peeled the sticker back.
Oh, yeah. Rick, a kid I'll call Rick because I don't want to use his real name, that I'll get into in the next episode because we became competitors in Star Wars.
Ooh.
He did it, and he showed it to me and said, that missile was supposed to fire. So it all became the waiting game of you know, will it work? Will it work? And, you know, I have a theory that, one, I think Boba Fett is why I love toy collecting now, because I love getting crap in the mail. And
well, I'll also say that I said this on the Geek Show and Hair podcast, my single favorite classic Star Wars action figure of all time is that Boba Fett. And it could be my favorite, if not at least one of my favorite action figures of all time. I think it's just gorgeous.
I love it. I had my 8-year-old son challenge me and say, my Boba Fett's better than your crappy Boba Fett, because I still have mine. And I was like, you know, his is cut, you know, real Wookiee scalps and a felt cape and, you know, and it's like, all right, you've kind of won this round, but you weren't there, man, you know. The other thing I wanted to say about Boba Fett is, you know, a lot of people say he's such a nothing character. Why is he so endeared? I really think it connects to that bloody action figure.
Oh, absolutely.
I think he's Captain Happy moment for a lot of us.
Absolutely. And in fact, who was just talking about this? Was I talking about this? Did I imagine it? Did I write it? Oh, it was on the Geek Shall Inherit Facebook page, somebody asked
why
I thought Boba Fett was so popular. And I gave this long, very long-winded sort of answer. But what I was saying was, he was more interesting to me when we didn't know anything about him. Like the back of that card, and I'm going to paraphrase, but the reason it was so exciting for me, and also the reason that his, you know, the final fate of Boba Fett in Return of the Jedi is such a punch to the gut. On the back of this card, it says, you know, Boba Fett is a major character, major new villain character in the next Star Wars film, The Empire Strikes Back. He is a threat to the Rebel Alliance, especially Han Solo.
Yeah, that was an exciting. You could read so much into that.
So they already built this thing up, and you thought, you know, especially after Empire and how Han got caught with his pants down, so to speak, when you got to Jedi, there was going to be a 5-minute mano-a-mano takedown, you know, Kirk versus the Gorn fight between Han and Boba Fett, because this had been built up literally for years. And for kids, you know, a year was a decade. I mean, we waited a long time to get this stuff. So this action figure, you had to get 3 proofs of purchase, you know, write down the address and mail away for this free action figure. And yes, you're right. Besides the early bird kit, if you didn't get that, then Boba Fett most likely was the very first thing most of us ever mailed away for and got in the mail.
I flirted with doing this. I wanted to get a second one, and I thought I could use the crappy proof of purchase from the coloring books.
You could, though.
And I found – I think you told me – but I was so worried about getting caught, I didn't do it. I guess, I grew up in Catholic household.
I did it all the time.
Like, yeah, that pissed me off when you told me that, because it's like, damn it, you know, I could have had that survival kit and all that crap I didn't have the figures for.
Well, I was what was referred to in the States for a time. I was a latchkey kid.
Oh, yeah.
So I came home, you know, when I got home at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was alone until 6 or 7 o'clock at night, you know, made myself dinner, you know, whatever, watched Sanford and Son, whatever it was, Doctor Who. And
good times for me, I believe.
It was Doctor Who and Battle of the Planets were back to back, like 4 and 4:30. But
powerful hour.
I always had a couple of keys in my pocket, my house keys. So if I was at a toy store, I would even use my key to, like, a little chainsaw and cut out the proof of purchase off of the packaging.
You're a menace.
I know. I was a little thief. I know. And then he could mail it. Now, so Boba Fett kicked it off. He was the first one pre-Empire, I believe. And then, and I'm not going to get this in order, but the next mail-away figures were, I believe, Forlom,
yeah.
Admiral Akbar.
A thing with masks and stuff, so you could emulate being in the survival kit, and then Admiral Akbar.
I'm not even getting in order. No, because I thought there was another one from Empire. It was Forlom. I thought there was another one from Empire. Someone can
write. I think the Emperor was also a mail-in, wasn't he?
Emperor was a mail-away. Nine Num was a mail-away. Akbar, Anakin. You know, old man Anakin was a mail away.
Because that was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. What else? There was another.
Was Bossk a mail away?
Bossk was a mail away. Yes, you're right. Bossk was, but that was after.
I don't remember that.
I think it was after Empire came out. I got. So we got Boba Fett, and of course we had to try to make the missile shoot, which it didn't. For those of you that don't know, and it's a running gag that you and I always talk about, there was a beautiful, wonderful, amazing time in the mid to late 70s where America, and I suppose Canada, was getting all this fantastic product from Japan, all these amazing toys. And one of the things that all of these Japanese toys had in common, regardless of what they were, whether it was a Hello Kitty thing or Battle of the Planets, they came with some section that was a little missile that shot out of the thing. And these little missiles shot into the next zip code. I mean, no lie. These little things shot across the house. And Mattel, at that point, had produced some of this Battlestar Galactica product, Cylon ships, Cylon Raiders, Colonial Vipers, that did that very thing. Shot missiles out.
Yeah, and those little Shinsei Jeek Tunnel and those little UFO vehicles all shot these little tiny. I look like a candy.
The diecast. In fact, I've got. We've talked about this before. One of my prized possessions, literally, one of the things I'd grab if there's a fire, is a company called ARK from Japan.
Yeah.
Made these amazing diecast creatures. Every bit of them, from the hip to the shin to the ankle, pops apart, and you can make them into all different things. And they must have been based on Ultraman, because the one that I have is who's the guy with the claws, the lobster claws, but he's got like a bird head.
I think it's Baltan Sijan.
Baltan. I've got the Baltan. It was my 8th birthday, one of the greatest birthday presents in a box. My dad got me that Baltan. And an Incredible Hulk collected volume, introduction by Stan Lee. And in the cover it says, TV's biggest star. So it was like right when the show was.
Oh,
was
yeah.
I still have this diecast Baltan. This thing came with a Gatling gun. So you would put like 10 tiny little yellow missiles in this Gatling gun. And when you turned the knob, one by one, it shot these missiles across the room. Well, so Mattel is making this Battlestar Galactica stuff, and some kid in Des Moines or whatever.
Is that Illinois?
Let's say Illinois, decides to turn the ship around, open his mouth, and shoot the missile down his throat.
Yep.
He chokes to death, and subsequently it makes the news, and all the toy companies stop making these missiles. And in fact, the next wave of Battlestar Galactica toys that came out, when you press the button, the missile never left the ship. It just went bing.
Tick. Yeah.
Or alternately, the toys came with these new missiles that were about 7 inches long with a big friggin' red rubber end.
Yeah.
When you stuck them in the thing and you pressed the button, they shot out about half an inch and just went to the ground.
I used to kill myself laughing in the 80s. There was a Power Lords toy line, I think called Beast Machines, as an offshoot.
Oh, yeah.
And the commercial used to just make me and my friend, like we were teenagers when this was out, but
right.
Laugh because, you know, the kid would press a button to shoot the missile off, and it was so clunky and heavy, and they would make a sound like, and the thing would go like 12 inches and just clunk to the ground like, wow, you know. You know, I just wanted to kind of touch base because we were talking. Bossk was a mail-away figure, but he was a secret mail-away figure.
That's right.
And I did not know that.
Yes, I remember that now. That's right.
So,
well, back to these missiles because I always want to make this joke and I don't ever want it to go away.
Yeah.
One kid decides to turn the ship the wrong way, chokes on a missile, and we all get deprived of these great toys that can no longer shoot missiles. And Boba Fett was the first casualty. And I always say, was it really a tragedy? Because to me, it's like culling the herd. Like how, you know, that kid was going to end up no good. You know, what was he going to really contribute to society? But anyway.
That reminds me of Joel Hodgson's bit about, you know, hey, we all got burned by our thing makers, but we didn't cry to our moms about it.
You know? It's true. You can't. I remember being at a store not long ago, like some kind of candy store, or it was a British store here in L.A. with candies and stuff. And they had the last batch of Kinder Eggs. She only had like 3 left. And she says, you better get those. I said, why? She said, you can't. There's no. You can't have Kinder Eggs in this country anymore. I said, what are you talking about? She said, yeah, some kid, you know, choked on a little piece of a Kinder toy inside the egg. And so and it's true, you can't get Kinder Eggs in America anymore. And I said, you're joking. And the way I said it, she must have thought I was like, oh, you're joking. That's so sad. She said, yeah, it's tragic, isn't it? And I said, is it, though?
Yeah.
Is it really tragic that that happened? It's tragic that I can't get Kinder Eggs anymore. But interestingly enough, some company has gotten around it there is for this Ultimate Spider-Man animated series that's on in the States right now. Mm-hmm. Somebody put out a little Spider-Man head that is basically like a chocolate egg, and inside is a little capsule that has a little Spider-Man toy inside. So it's not the Kinder Egg, it's not the Kinder Toys, but somebody is doing little Spidey eggs that are very similar.
Spidey eggs. I don't like the sound of that.
Yeah, it's exactly what Bubble Yum was made of. It was made of
right. We're getting back to doing some callback to the first episode.
Exactly.
We're looking at an hour and 20 minutes. So
well,
we should
prove that we can talk about Star Wars till the cow's coming home.
So
which is perfect because Boba Fett and the rest of the stuff takes us right up to Empire, and all the mystery that was involved before we got to Empire and what was coming and the toys and everything else. Now we can leave it there, and the next time we talk about Star Wars, we can hit Empire because, as you will soon hear, this will keep them on the edge of their seats till the next one. As you'll soon hear, all my love and enthusiasm and excitement for the world of Star Wars was about to change drastically with The Empire Strikes Back on every level, on the news level, the toy level, the enthusiasm level. Everything is about to change.
Yeah, that's good. And I'll regale them with my love of Ernest Borgnine action figures and my cheating on Star Wars with absolutely every property that came around.
Mm-hmm.
So
Battle Beyond the Stars, I think, was your favorite, right?
Oh, you know, I had a John Boy doll. Yeah. Actually, I really like Battle Beyond the Stars.
Once again, you make it easy, Hyler. You make it easy talking about this stuff.
I'm a yappy bird.
Sure.
Great. Well, that's it for us today. Tune in soon for part two. And until then, have
May
a great
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you. How did I miss that?
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Star Wars. If they should bar wars, please let these Star Wars stay. And hey. How about that nutty Star Wars bar? Can you forget all the creatures in there? And hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask. Did he scare you as much as he scared me? Ah! Star Wars, those near and far.